to RSN 927's Breakfast Bite.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show on this Wednesday morning, the 7th of October 2020. Plenty to get through on a very busy Wednesday morning. We'll start in the footy world, where Sean Higgins spoke yesterday. Will he or won't he be at North Melbourne next year?
I think the reality is that all options are live. Clearly, I'm still a contracted player. There is the possibility that I'll continue there. But at the same time, and I said this last year, that I'd always put what was best for the club first.
All the trade news starting to buzz around, especially with Adam Saad making his intentions clear yesterday as well. More on that in just a second. Meanwhile, Taylor Adams, pretty happy with his smother that just about won the Pies of the game and the dying moments on the weekend.
Sort of washed over me until I got to my phone after the game and realised that I had a few friends that had really pumped it up as the smother of the millennium, much to Heath Shaw's demise.
Not bad there from Taylor Adams. Meanwhile, there's an upset brewing in the French Open. More on that a little later. But there was another upset overnight with an absolute outsider beating the number 3 seed.
It is all over. The fairy tale here in Paris. It just goes on and on for Nadia Podoroska. 131 in the world through the qualifying and now into the semi-finals.
6-2, 6-4 over Elena Svitolina. Unbelievable result. We'll bring you the full details next on The Breakfast Bite.
You're listening to RSN 927's Breakfast Bite.
Andrew Bates here, taking you all the way through until 6 o'clock when the Breakfast Club returns with Half and Whitey, and plenty to get through on the Breakfast Club on your Wednesday morning as always as well. They'll chat to Craig Abel about the French Open, who's been our correspondent the whole way through the early mail before 7 o'clock. After 7, Sherelle McMahon, John Ralph on the trade situation, Tom Brookhouse, CEO of the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, the new NBL team, Dan McStay and Jack Loney after 8 o'clock. So a lot to get through on a very busy morning of the Breakfast Club. Then after 8.30, Racing Pulse with Michael Felgate. Looking forward to hearing who the Cox Plate legends are today in the build-up to the 100th edition of the WS Cox Plate. And then after 10.30, always a bit of Midweek Magnus with Gareth Hall on RSN Central as he runs you through everything up until race one today. Let's start with the footy world, though. As you heard, Sean Higgins off the top as the trade period starts to intensify before it's even begun. Let's have a listen a little more to what he had to say about his future and whether it's at North Melbourne or elsewhere.
And I think the reality is that all options are live. Clearly, I'm still a contracted player. There is the possibility that I'll continue there. But at the same time, and I said this last year when I was going through a negotiation and talks of moving teams as well, that I'd always put what was best for the club first. And I did that last year and gave them the option if it was best for me to move on, if we were going down that path and that avenue of bringing younger guys in, given my age, then as much as I loved the club and wanted to stay, that I'd be open to that. And to be honest, the conversations are exactly the same this year. They've been open and honest. I've had communication with Reece and Brady in the last couple of weeks while we're in the hub. The plan was to get away and have a family holiday and spend some time outside of the bubble over the couple of weeks which we're in at the moment. I haven't had any communication with the club since we've left the hub 2 weeks ago. And as I mentioned, due to pick that up in the coming weeks and then plan out, sit down what those options are and then also what's best for both parties.
So Sean Higgins maybe, well, sounds like there he might well be on the move. Meanwhile, Adam Saad yesterday making his intentions clear, telling Carlton to make him a Blue in 2021. He won't be at the Bombers. He's requested a trade. Carlton releasing this statement late last night. We can confirm that Adam Saad has today notified us of his commitment to join the Carlton Football Club, said Head of Football Brad Lloyd. Adam has officially requested a trade and will now work with the Essendon Football Club and Adam's management to finalise the deal. We welcome Adam's decision and at this stage will not be providing any further comments. So good news there for the Blues to attract a man who's finished in the top three in the Essendon BNF for the last 3 years. Let's head to a bit of action on the field. We'll start with Mason Cox, who had a bit of fun yesterday and spoke about getting fired up by the WA crowd on the weekend.
It's enjoyable going back and forth, and I guess to hit the first one and then talk a bit of smack back and forth. And I think one of them told me to go get coronavirus like your president, and that didn't sit too well. So kick the second one and then look back at them again and then kick the third one. I think they're all sitting down by that point. I kind of enjoy a bit of pressure. I kind of enjoy a bit of the atmosphere of a finals game. You know, I think it's a unique experience that not many people get to, you know, be a part of. And for myself, coming from the States, I really didn't imagine myself, you know, being a part of all this kind of stuff and, you know, being able to experience what I've been able to experience. So you just kind of soak it all in and, you know, make the most of every moment. After round one, played pretty well, I guess, and then went into the whole lockdown thing and was probably trying to get my eyes checked and a few other things that usually, you know, not in a pandemic, you can kind of get sorted and everything else. But coming back, it was a bit frustrating to not be able to see straight whenever you're trying to mark a footy coming at you. But eventually, you know, I saw a few doctors along the way and were able to kind of get some contacts and sort out a few medication stuff to be able to help fix the problem. And now we're kind of back to normal.
Mason Cox there speaking yesterday, the Pies, of course, with a big task this week against the Cats. Let's head to Dan Hannanbury. Speaking of big tasks, Saints come up against the Tigers. Looking forward to that indeed. Here's Dan Hannanbury on his recent form.
I was pretty down and it was pretty flattening for a couple of weeks there after surgery, thinking it was sort of going to be tough to get back. Makes all the rehab, you know, worth it, I guess. So to be able to contribute in a really good win was, yeah, really pleasing. No, I knew it was still there. I mean, there's been games early in the year where I sort of produced some really good footy, and yeah, I just needed some continuity in training and some luck with my body. Dusty's one of the best players in the competition, so and their back line's as strong as anyone, so they've got weapons all over the ground, really. So we're going to be pretty have our hands full with what they can bring.
More footy to come a little later in the show. Before we leave footy, though, Caleb Daniel, bit of an upset winner last night in the Western Bulldogs Best and Fairest Award. He beat the Bont to take home his first Charlie Sutton Trophy.
Yeah, I'm extremely proud. I'm also extremely humbled, I guess. I suppose being voted the Best and Fairest for the year is something that you've obviously dreamed about ever since you started playing footy, and to be able to do it in front of my friends and the players that I was able to do it in front of and play with this year is something I'll hold with me forever, I guess. Being able to have that confidence in your own ability and to trust that you've done the work and it's coming out in your game is something that, yeah, I'm really, really happy with and really glad that I've been able to get that consistent sort of form throughout the last couple of years. I was really disappointed with the back end of last year, just with a couple of my body issues. It tore my hamstring a couple of times, and that was really disappointing because I think, you know, last year we had a really good year, and then this year was similar, and I was able to play every game and stay on the park, and I think that's a major thing to be able to do and to be able to play good footy consistently over the year.
Let's head to a bit of the racing news from yesterday. Early yesterday, Damien Oliver was able to jump on Mwanga ahead of the Caulfield Guineas this weekend. Here's what he had to say after his immediate reaction jumping off the horse.
Yeah, I was really pleased with him. He's quite a mature type of three-year-old for the limited racing he's had. And most importantly, he seemed to adapt to Caulfield quite well.
So Victorian fans wouldn't know a whole lot about him. As a young horse, what sort of mentally and physically just strike you about him?
He's a scopey type of three-year-old. He seems quite fit, as most of the Chris Wallace horses are. He seemed to take everything in his stride, which was, you know, kind of what you want when they're coming down to Victoria to race left-handed at their first time.
So there we go, Damien Oliver speaking yesterday. Let's hear from Dave Eustace, who was on Racing Pulse, and his thoughts on Anders, who went round Caulfield yesterday.
He did, yeah. I was very happy with him. He's obviously a very natural free-running horse. He jumped very, very well and put three or four lengths on him early in the trial and just settled nicely underneath Mark and quickened up the hill well. We didn't ask him to have a really strong trial, just a nice solid hit out. He drew off very good. I was very very happy with his fitness. So, look, he seems in great nick. He was very exuberant. He's been bouncing for the last 2 weeks, really, and needed that. So, very happy.
Looking ahead, of course, to the Manicato. The big news yesterday from the Caulfield Guineas field was the fact that Glenn Fittich, unfortunately, has had to be scratched by Peter Moody. So it was on the third line of betting at around $7, but now out of the Caulfield Guineas after the barrier draw yesterday too. So quite a late development yesterday afternoon, which is a setback for all of those who got 12s before it's Mooney Valley a couple of Friday nights ago. Ole Kirk is the $3.80 favourite at tab.com.au. And in the 1,000 guineas, a bit of movement in the markets yesterday as Hungry Heart went into $3.40 favourite after the barrier draw. Instant Celebrity on the drift a little to $3.50. Those two clearly head betting ahead of everyone else. The only other horse in single figures is Vangelic, who is at $9.50. So plenty of movement yesterday in the 1,000 guineas and Caulfield guineas markets. Let's head to the French Open now. Some incredible stuff from overnight, as you heard off the top, Podorowska, with a huge upset over the number three seed, Elena Svitolina. So that is the women's side of things. The other completed match was Danielle Collins, 6-4, 4-6, 6-4 over Jabeur of Switzerland, who is the number 30 seed. So both seeds in the quarterfinals are being knocked out. Let's have a listen to Podorowska after her win, and she also spoke about her form as well.
Nadia, congratulations. You just wrote a page of history. You are the first player ever in the women's draw to reach the semi-final of Roland Garros playing the qualies.
Well, it's a little bit difficult for me. Speaking now after the match, my English is not so good, but well, thank you very much, everybody, for your support. I'm very, very happy.
Wonderful victory today against Elena, and once again, we've seen all your game. You can do every single shot on a tennis court. You play front, drop shot, backhand, you can come to the net. Did you learn to play every kind of shot?
I try to. We did a very good job with my coaches during the quarantine. I've been training a lot with all of my team. I think that's why I'm here today.
What a fantastic story. The world number 131 through to the semi-final of a Grand Slam. It has been quite the week at the French Open. Let's hear from Danielle Collins now. She's also through to a semi-final despite being unseeded in the tournament.
And you really had to fight so hard to finally get the win at the end. You must be so pleased and relieved.
Yeah, I kind of felt like I was in the driver's seat up until 6-4, 3-0. But then, you know, she's tricky, and she served really well. She hit some drop shots on shots that I wasn't really expecting. And I just had to try to dig it out. It broke my rhythm. I lost my way there a little bit, lost some of the shots that I had been hitting earlier, and I just needed to try to stay positive.
You're coming from college tennis, which is not unusual. And you're coming from Virginia, I think Charlottesville. I'm sure there must be a lot of people really pleased about your performance in a Grand Slam. You're for the first time in the quarterfinal Roland Garros. It must be really a special feeling for you.
Yeah, you know, I did kind of go an untraditional route, and it took me a while to kind of figure everything out, and I'm still trying to figure out this tour thing. It's a little bit different than my life before turning pro. But yeah, I have a lot of great support in Charlottesville and from the UVA community.
Final question for you before we're letting you go. I think you're coached by Nicolas Almagro. He used to be, of course, an extremely good clay court player. Can you describe that collaboration and when did it start?
Yeah, Nico and I started working with each other last week, so it's all new.
That's a great start then.
Yeah, I didn't have a coach at the US Open, so I tried to find somebody right away, and luckily I found somebody with an incredible career, somebody that was a top 10 player, so it's a really special treat for me to be able to work with him.
So an amazing story, Danielle Collins through to the quarterfinal against Sophia Kennan. In the other result this morning, it's just finished actually on court, and Diego Schwartzman has defeated Dominic Thiem in five sets. So number 12 seed upsetting the number 3 seed, 7-6, 5-7, 6-7, 7-6, 6-2. Rafael Nadal about to step out onto court in about an hour's time as well. So plenty happening at the French Open at the moment. Time for a quick break. On the other side of this, we'll catch up on all of the cricket news from yesterday, a bit of rugby ahead of the Bledisloe Cup, and the NFL results from yesterday as well.
This is The Breakfast Bite.
Atlanta rushing for it. Time for Rodgers to float one. Easy catch and touchdown.
This is how bad it's gotten for the Atlanta Falcons. They're just trying to tackle guys, and they still can't keep them out of the end zone.
The Packers too good yesterday for the Falcons, 30-16. The Chiefs beat the Patriots 26-10 in the latest results in the NFL. It has the Packers sitting nicely at the moment in the NFC. They're currently top 4 from 4 to start their season in the NFC North. Let's head to a little bit of cricket news from yesterday, as Whitey and Half discussed. We might be changing the calendar just to suit the Indians and give them an extra couple of days rest in between the Melbourne and Sydney test. Alan Border last night, speaking on Fox Sports, is not happy about it.
I don't think it should be a negotiated scenario. If it's necessary because of what's happening globally with the virus and all that sort of stuff, fair enough. But if it's just that they wanted extra time off to have a bit of a spell between Boxing Day and the New Year's Test match, that's rubbish. We've been doing this for how many years now? Back-to-back Test matches. It works a treat, you know, through that Christmas, New Year period. And I wouldn't be comfortable with it moving just because India, you know, want a couple more days off. I think they're just playing mind games. I mean, they consider themselves, you know, the strength of world cricket, and financially that's the case. So they've got a fair say in things. But, you know, if the roles were reversed, we wouldn't have much of a say in the itinerary. It'd just be put in front of us, and these are the dates and where we're going to play, and you can negotiate as much as you like. But, you know, these are traditional dates that everyone knows. They've been in the calendar forever. So, you know, to start renegotiating now seems to, it's a tough one. I wouldn't be bowing down to it. We've got our traditional dates. Let's stick with them.
Wait and see what happens there in the cricketing world. Meanwhile, in the rugby world, the Bledisloe Cup starts on Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff Australian time. Let's hear from Matt Samua, the Melbourne Rebel, ahead of the Bledisloe.
I mean, one thing the young guys here do all right is they've got a ton of confidence. A lot of them have come from a winning team, particularly the Brumbies guys, young guys. I think someone like Noah, it's a good example. He's just won a competition and he's got some good experience and big games under his belt there. So, look, I don't think anyone would be disrespecting a Bledisloe team and naming a team full of debutants. But in saying that, you know, we've got to develop players and develop a squad for the future as well. So I'm sure it'll be a balance. I think most guys can probably, guess that there'll be a mix of both.
Let's focus in on the footy now for the last couple of minutes of the Breakfast Bite. We'll start with Craig McRae, who had a look towards the Saints from a Tigers perspective.
Yeah, and they had a measure early in the year. Yeah, we've grown a fair bit from that game, and they have the same. And they've got a lot of threats, and unfortunately got a couple of injuries. But I'm sure they'll get some players back in that'll play pivotal roles for them. We're certainly going to have to be at the top of our game to stretch them. Yeah, the aerial power is a strength of theirs, and one of our great strengths is getting the ball to ground, and we did that on the weekend. But I think we've got some RFIs in terms of our ground level support, and I've already addressed that with some of our smalls this week, and hopefully you get the spike in that area. They attack the goal front really well. They back the contest in, so they get a lot of goals from the goal square or around that area, like you said. So running into an open goal or getting a crumb off. So our aerial power, as you said, is going to need to be strong, but that ground level support to back it up at both ends is going to be really important.
Richmond and St Kilda on Friday night, 7:50 p.m. And then on Saturday night, Geelong and Collingwood. What a Guineas day it is going to be. four group ones at Caulfield into a hotly contested semi-final between the Cats and the Pies. I cannot wait for this weekend. Speaking of the Pies, let's hear from Taylor Adams. He spoke yesterday about the win on the weekend over West Coast.
You know, there's obviously been a lot of commentary about us as a football side in the last 5 or 6 weeks, and, you know, some of it, you know, there's probably some merit to it, but internally we're really confident in what we can produce. You know, we're certainly still the underdogs. They're obviously a quality team. We've had some really, really solid battles against them over the years. You know, they've been a good team for a long time, and you know, they've played in big finals in the recent years, and probably just fallen a little bit short to what they'd, you know, would have liked to have done. So, you know, we're expecting a team that's just as hungry as we were last week.
To Hugh McCluggage now from the Brisbane Lions on his goal kicking. He's been a bit inaccurate this year, Hugh, as well as the Brisbane Lions teams as a whole.
Fair bit of relief sort of swept over me when I kicked that one. I'd obviously missed one a bit earlier as well that I would have liked to kick, but yeah, it was nice to be able to kick the sealer and yeah, move on to another week of finals. Yeah, it was tough sleeping Friday night, but pretty exciting in the crowd. Like, it was just unbelievable how loud they were, considering it wasn't even nearly a full house. Yeah, we're very lucky to have fans here at the moment, and they've made it a whole lot more enjoyable out there. We'd knocked off a lot of sides that we hadn't beaten for a long time, and they were just another one that we wanted to tick off. Obviously, it does hang over your head a little bit, that, and obviously we hadn't won a final for quite some time either, and to be able to tick those two off, I think it means we can just play with an open mind now. You've got a dream. I think Zork said it before the game. We've thought about, you know, going all the way, and it'd be silly to shy away from that. But once again, we're probably a process team, and we're not looking forward to anything further than the game that's ahead of us. And that's what we did for the Richmond game, and that's what we're going to do for the next game, whoever we end up playing.
Hugh McCluggage speaking there yesterday. That's it for the Breakfast Bite on this Wednesday morning. Lots to get through on the Breakfast Club. After 6 o'clock, Half and Whitey have a chock-a-block show after 8:30 this morning, Racing Pulse with Michael Felgate. And don't ever forget Gareth Hall from 10:30 with RSN Central taking a ride up towards the first. That's it. Have a great Wednesday. We'll chat again tomorrow.